That's another one. I got that juice. New AP. She got that juice. She got that squeeze. She got that wet. I'm on them skis. I got that drip. I'm overseas. D-R-I.
Hello. It is another episode of The Juice tonight on a Tuesday. I had a very long weekend. That consisted of a lot of illegal consumption of liquid and maybe stuff beyond that. You know, who knows? But yeah, I was at Oktoberfest, got to see a bunch of my good buddies, a couple longtime listeners, JJ and Eli. I was able to see them. That was great. But yeah, fun weekend. I watched the Packers have a very interesting game on Sunday, but they came out with the W. Aaron Rodgers played probably the worst half of football he's ever played. And, you know, what are you going to do? We won the game, and they played much better in the second half, so you can't really get too mad. We are 3-1. But it's time to – we got to start with something. We're going to start at college football. So Paul Christ, long time, I mean, since 2013, 2014 or whatever. Paul Christ is now coaching, is now no longer the head coach of the Wisconsin Badgers. I was shocked. I didn't disagree with the decision, but I was shocked. See, this is not something that Wisconsin usually does. They don't fire coaches mid-season, especially when that coach was, fair to say, a winning coach at Wisconsin. Very successful. Took us to a couple Rose Bowls, one Rose Bowl, and was an assistant to Brett Bielema for a while. Had a couple Rose Bowls in there. You know, from Wisconsin, has Wisconsin in his blood. Yeah, just a very successful, great man that was coaching Wisconsin since 2013, and we fired him mid-season during a season that, quite frankly, is it doesn't even make any sense. Losing to Ohio State made sense, but losing to Washington State, losing to Illinois, both games at home, the Illinois game to Brett Bielema, former Wisconsin coach who left us in the dust for a job that's not even as good as Wisconsin and Arkansas. And I think if Brett Bielema, if that's any other loss, you know, if let's say he loses to Rutgers at home, I don't think he gets fired. But the fact that it was Brett Bielema, the fact that he lost by 21, the fact that I can't stress this enough, the fact that it was Brett Bielema, the guy who Paul Christ is just two wins away from beating him on the Wisconsin coach's all-time wins list. I think he would have been third. I think he'd be third on the list or second, either one. All I know is he's behind Barry Alvarez. But now he can't, you know, couldn't tie the record. Now he's no longer the head coach of Wisconsin. First, I have a lot of respect for Paul Christ. I thought, you know, when Wisconsin was in their days of, you know, beating the teams that they should beat and then losing the teams that they, you know, should lose to, and they were getting to the Big Ten championship and then losing to Ohio State inevitably, I was okay with that. I was like, you know, Paul Christ, he's a good coach, very underrated coach, gets the most out of all of his recruiting classes, but, you know, we're never going to get to the next step. And I wasn't mad about that. That's just how Wisconsin football is. But yeah, this season, that's just, you can't be doing this. 2-3, Wisconsin's not a 2-3 football program. I thought when you look at their schedule before the season started, you were like, okay, at this point, we're probably gonna be 4-1. We're definitely losing to Ohio State, but 4-1, potentially win out because our schedule was so easy. And now we're probably missing the Big Ten championship for sure. And maybe not even going to make a bowl game, depending on how the rest of the season goes with Jim Leonard at the helm. But the biggest issues I've always had with Paul Christ as coach of Wisconsin is just where's the energy? You know, you're coaching a bunch of kids. And when you're coaching a bunch of kids, you see college football coaches, you see how animated they are on the sidelines. You see how hype they get after big plays. You see how angry they get after bad calls. And Paul Christ really never brought any of that to the table, which is why I thought that some reasons why Wisconsin came out flat in some games. That I feel like that's part of the reason. You have a coach that's just not. I can't speak for the players, but you just have a coach that's not doesn't seem very motivating. And when you're a bunch of kids playing football, I feel like you don't need this as much in the NFL, just because you're an adult. You this is the game that you love. This is the game that you make money for. I feel like you're already ready to go and hyped and ready to go. And then also you have assistants that you have position and coaches that kind of do that for the head coach. Now the head coach can be a motivator like Dan Campbell or Mike Tomlin or whatnot, but it's not as necessary. But when you're a head coach, like that is your program. When you're in the NFL and you're a head coach, sometimes that's the quarterback's team. Sometimes that's the GM, that's his team. That's the way people see it. Sometimes it is the coach's team. But when you're a head coach for a college football team, that's all yours. And you need to get those players at the peak of just motivation when you're going into every game on Saturday. And Paul Chryst didn't do that from what I saw on the sidelines. So that's unfortunate. But I do like hiring Jim Leonard as interim head coach. He's probably going to be the head coach, which I'm okay with. I think Jim Leonard is one of the most underrated coaches in all of college football. He constantly puts out top 10 defenses with 3-star recruits. And he's again, Wisconsin guy, played for Wisconsin, knows the drill, and he's young. I love that. But what I really need for Wisconsin is you got to bring in a good OC. Bobby Engram is not cutting it. He's a Chryst guy, and Chryst is just not. He's an offensive Paul Chryst is an offensive guy, but he's too old fashioned for today's college game. The college football game today is completely transitioning. Back in the early 2010s when I was watching, the teams that would win were Alabama, obviously. And you know how they won national championships? They ran the ball down your throat, and the quarterbacks were mostly game managers. Now look at who's won national championships. Last year, Georgia, very. I guess Georgia maybe not the greatest example, but they had such a talented defense and a QB that could get the job done, and really just really talented personnel all across the board. But then you look at Alabama the year before had Mac Jones. Mac Jones threw a lot of yards. He had receivers all over the place. A great run game, just a complete vertical offense with Steve Sarkisian. Then you go back to Joe Burrow again. Receivers all across the board. Joe Brady made that offense very vertical. It was a very downfield offense. And then even go back a little bit to Cardale Jones. That was kind of one of the first teams that really showed, okay, we can throw the ball a lot more. And that's kind of what college football is transitioning to. Nick Saban, you've seen him transition to that. He used to be a, power run head coach. That's kind of how he did things, win with O-linemen and running backs. Now, nope, you got to have an NFL quarterback to win a national championship. Do I think Graham Mertz is an NFL quarterback? No. But he's looked a lot better this year. I don't care what anybody says. Graham Mertz has looked a lot better, and I think if you bring in an offensive coordinator, Daryl Bevel, but nobody's saying that on Twitter. I want Daryl Bevel. Nobody wants him. Nobody talks about him. Do you think Daryl Bevel wants to keep bouncing around these offensive coordinator jobs or passing game coordinator jobs? No, I feel like he'd want to go back to Wisconsin, where he played quarterback for 3 years, was a legendary player, and would get a job that he could keep for 10 years instead of getting inevitably fired after 3 years like he has been in the NFL. But anyways, you need to bring in an offense. Jim Leonard needs to find an offensive guy that can truly work and develop a quarterback. We had a 4-star in our hands. We had a top-rated recruit in our hands in Graham Mertz. And guess what? Now he's going to be a redshirt junior next year. So wait, no. Is he a redshirt junior? Wait, hold on. So freshman year, he redshirted. Then he was a redshirt freshman. Then he was a redshirt sophomore. He's a redshirt junior right now. So next year, and he gets a COVID year. So you potentially have 2 more years left to Graham Mertz unless he transfers. He's got enough talent to be a good college quarterback. I truly believe it. You can't be that highly recruited out of high school and not have something there. And I've seen it. I've seen it. He's improved this year, but you need to bring in a guy. He needs to this guy, the person that you bring in has to be a household name somewhat, at least in Wisconsin lore. that you can bring in and potentially make this quarterback into something. Because right now he's barely anything, but I see something in Graham Mertz. And if you can get him to the next level next year and still have Braylon Allen, that's a team that can cause some damage, potentially win a Big Ten championship. I guess that's all I got to say on the matter. But Paul Christ, a lot of respect for the man. He's a really great human and was a very great coach for Wisconsin in his years as an assistant when he, was offensive coordinator with Russ and, became a great head coach. But yeah, it was time to make a change, and I thought it was the right way to do it. So now we got to talk about the Packers. So I guess a few takeaways I have is I think people need to chill on, getting pissed at Aaron Rodgers. I mean, yes, I said on my Twitter after the first half that I could not even fathom and I couldn't even describe how pissed I was at how Aaron Rodgers has been playing this year. But then he went out and played the best half of football he's played all year. He hit some deep throws, should have had a deep touchdown to Romeo Doubs if he brings it to the ground. And candidly, I rarely saw him miss. The stuff that I hate seeing from him and that I'd been seeing all these all that I've been seeing for pretty much the whole season this year is he gets conservative, and then when he does throw deep balls, the guy's not even fucking there. He's covered. Like, what is the point of throwing that? And then he, kind of rolls his eyes and doesn't like him. Like, wait, Aaron, you can't really blame rookie receiver. I don't think there's anyone to blame. I just don't know why you're fucking throwing that. Like, you don't wait first. And another thing, he's got three picks this year. At this time in the season, he's got zero usually. And he's got three, actually five turnovers too. The turnovers are an issue. Like, you can't be turning the ball over like that. But like, I saw him in the second half against the Patriots, which is not a bad defense. He was in rhythm. He hit a couple deep, nice deep balls, and he got the ball out quick and developed a little tempo in the offense. The first 3 weeks, I felt like the offense was slow. There was no rhythm, and anytime he took a deep shot, it was never going to be there, and it never was ever there. And that's the kind of stuff that frustrates me. Like, when you see Christian Watson running a streak down the sideline, and instead you take a 5 yard in route to Sammy Watkins, which I saw in the Bears game, why not test the rookie? Why not show all that speed that you've been telling people about, the stride lengths with Christian Watson? Why not take some shots like that? Not shots where the receiver has absolutely no leverage and there's a safety coming over the top and you overthrow him. Like, that's the stuff that bugs me. That doesn't build any sort of tempo, and that doesn't, make the defense respect the deep ball whatsoever. But another takeaway I have is, man, Rashawn Gary, he is something else, dude. I gotta say, his plays, he had four drive ending plays in, he had two TFLs, two sacks in those four drive enders. Like, what he does coming off the edge and really making, because it's very hard. And I think the importance of Kenny Clark really shows in this, what Rashawn Gary is doing is Kenny Clark at this point is getting doubled pretty much every play. And it's deserved. He's got the highest pass rush win rate out of any D lineman. And you also got Preston Smith on the other side. So you got two pass rushers and an interior edge rusher that is dominant. It's very hard to double Rashawn Gary. And when you get him single, when you single block him, especially with a slow tackle like the Patriots had on Sunday, he's an absolute game wrecker. And he has no, his motor does not stop. And, the way he was able to force the turnover against Bailey Zappe, I was like, all right, that's just an easy sack for Rashawn Gary. And he's able to punch the ball out while he's on top and, get a turnover that was much needed. He's truly a game-breaking player, and he's probably the best player on our defense, barring, if Jaire Alexander can get healthy again. But yeah, I love what I'm seeing from Sean Gary. Hate what I'm seeing from the run defense. I mean, what the hell was that? Dave Montgomery beats the hell out of us. We did a decent job on Dalvin Cook. Leonard Fournette, we did all right against. But Damian Harris and Ramondre Stevenson, I swear they were averaging like 8 yards a carry. We can't be doing this every single year, I swear to God. You love what you see from the defense. The defense looks great on paper. And then you watch them, and they're still giving up 100 yards a game. You want to know why? It's time we get, and now granted, we did it. We drafted Devontae Wyatt, but it's time to start investing in getting some real D linemen alongside Kenny Clark, because Kenny Clark can't do it all. When you have a five-man front like the Packers do, that's two players right there. That's two players in the interior that aren't going to be doing much. It's Jaren Reed and Dean Lowry. And while I don't hate Jaren Reed, I think Dean Lowry's as average as it gets. I think Devontae Wyatt jumps off my screen a little more when the times that he comes in. So I don't know. I guess what I'm saying is, why not go after someone and why not go after like a legit D lineman free agency? We never do it. We never do it. We are so lucky that we land on Kenny Clark, because if we didn't have him, I don't know where we'd be at. But I hate that this issue is never solved after so many years of like building this defense. You got a great secondary. You got two really good linebackers in Quay Walker and Devondre. You got two great edge rushers. But if you don't have people in that interior that can plug holes, then when we get to the second level, things might all be for nothing. So yes, the Packers game should not have been that close, but I thought Rodgers looked tremendous in the second half. Rashawn Gary is an absolute game breaker, but the run defense has got to be, we got to start picking it up. And we'll have a great test against Saquon Barkley on Sunday, because the Giants will be down to their third string quarterback, and Rashawn and Saquon Barkley already gets the ball 20 plus times a game. It's going to be a test. It's going to be a test. They're going to be running it on us, and we better be ready for it. Because what else are they going to do? They can't throw the ball, especially on our secondary. So it seems to me that the Packers got to be ready for quite a defensive battle here. And which is why this is going to take me into my pick four parlay. Last week I went 2-4. Well, actually, wait, hold on. I picked the Eagles to beat the Jaguars, and they covered, which was good. The Packers and Patriots. Wait, no. I forgot what I said. All I know is I went 2-4. I know I hit on two. I know I hit on the Eagles, and I know I hit on the Falcons. Yeah, so I got those two. So I went 2-4. Pretty average. I got to do better. These pick four parlays have got to start hitting a little more, and we're gonna start off with this one. So Giants Packers over 40. I think over 41 is a fair number. Listen, the Giants are a terrible defense. They give up so many big plays. I think we're going to see the Packers scoring really quickly in every single one of their possessions. First off, the Giants don't really have a run stuffer with Leonard Williams hurt, and Aaron Jones and AJ Dillon. I don't expect them to slow down whatsoever. The run game against the Patriots was terrific. I don't see that being any different against the Giants. And then once the run game starts going, that leads to those downfield plays with play action that I expect Packers to hit, especially when Rodgers is starting to really trust Romeo on those deep balls. And maybe we'll see a Christian Watson deep touchdown this weekend. But I think 41 is going to be good. And then in terms of the Giants against us, I mean, there's what we really want to see in when you look at an over 41 is quick touchdowns. And when I told you that the Giants are probably going to run all over us, but Saquon Barkley he's a home run hitter. So I think it's going to be very, I think we're going to see a very quick, within the first three plays touch type touchdown from Saquon Barkley, just because he's that explosive and the Packers run defense is that bad. I like Saquon to, have a pretty nice game, and one touchdown that's going to be, maybe a 50 plus yard touchdown. And I think that's going to lead to an over 41. So I think the Packers will be scoring relatively easily, and the Giants, I don't think the Giants are going to win, obviously, but in London, these London games, people score a lot. You saw the Saints Vikings, and I think the game the year before with the Falcons when they played, Kyle Pitts had a crazy game, and those games score a lot. So yeah, I could see a lot of points being put up in this game, like maybe a 28-17 Packer win. Well, that's 45. That should be good. I also have another over for this over 44 and a half Texans Jaguars. I think this will be a shootout. Trevor Lawrence is playing to his credit. He's throwing a lot. Doug Peterson obviously trusts him, and when you couple that with the Texans' horrible defense, I could see big games from Christian Kirk and Travis Etienne on Sunday against the Texans. And then on the other side, I mean, the Texans got players on offense. They got Brandon Cooks, Damian Pierce had a very good game. And then Davis Mills, again, a guy, who, a quarterback who, you know, that team trusts, and they trust him to throw 30-plus times a game. So I could see, again, a lot of points being scored in this game. It's an AFC South. It's an AFC South matchup, and you know that there's no defense in the AFC South, so I could see a lot of points being scored in a Texans-Jaguars at Jacksonville, so the weather's going to be fine. Yeah, I like the over 45, 44 and a half of that one. Like a 31, again, like 31-17 or 28-21, something like that for the Texans and the Jags. All right, another one. Tennessee Titans minus 2.5 against the Commanders at the Commanders. I think the Titans are finally finding their identity, which is give the ball to Derrick Henry. And the Commanders really aren't much of a run-stuffing team. And I could see them realizing, you know, hey, the weather might be bad. Ryan Tannehill ain't shit. Let's get the ball to Derrick Henry coming off a very good game last week. I could see Derrick Henry running wild this game. And the Commanders, I don't know. I just don't – I think that that was a big smokescreen in the first game. Carson Wentz is starting to turn the ball over a little more. And the Titans, while I don't think their defense is great, they still got guys who can, you know, make plays on the secondary with Kevin Byard. And, yeah, it's not my most confident pick, but I like the Titans to win and cover the 2.5-point spread because I just think that they're much better the team than the Commanders, and the Commanders don't really have much of a, you know, home field advantage lore just because it's Washington, and, you know, who gives a fuck? And lastly, this is my upset pick of the week. This is what kind of brings the value of this pick up. The Jets and the Dolphins. I like the Jets to win. It's in New York, and the Dolphins are without Tua, obviously. Honestly, did not like what I, especially from Teddy, don't think that while he's not a complete downgrade from Tua, he's not, again, not a guy that's going to push the ball downfield really. Well, actually, no, that shouldn't be what I say. I just think that Teddy Bridgewater has the tendency to turn the ball over a lot. And I think against a revived Jets team with Zach Wilson back. Did anyone see Zach Wilson in the fourth quarter of the game against the Steelers? He threw for like 150 yards and a touchdown, and caught a touchdown too. And I think that this Jets team is just a little different. I think it's a little different. They're not a great roster, but I think if you bring in a team, you know, I think if you have a team like the Jets who just have their, you know, their second year quarterback back, very talented guy that I like a lot. And you bring in, and you got the Dolphins coming into the Jets stadium or coming into New York after their starting quarterback, their franchise quarterback goes down with a, you know, horrific, just a very poor, bad looking. Now it didn't end up being as bad as we thought, but a bad head and neck injury, along with the, you know, the everything going on the outside saying, you know, why'd they let him play? You know, what do the doctors see that allowed Tua to play in that game? I think there's just a lot of distractions with the Dolphins, and they have Teddy Bridgewater playing. So I like the Jets to win this. They're 2.5-point underdogs. I like them to win it outright. It's in New York. The Dolphins have a lot going on. Tua's hurt, and Zach Wilson's back. I think the Jets win this game, and they win an upset. Because obviously, you know, the Dolphins are coming off a game in which they, you know, they're coming in undefeated against the Bengals. Bengals kind of showed them that they're not as good as they thought they were, and then Tua gets hurt. I just think that there's a lot going on with the Jets, and the Jets, I feel like, are fully focused on seeing if they can be a playoff team with Zach Wilson now back. So, yeah, that's my pick. Risk 10 to win 164, or risk 100 to win 1640. That's my pick, and yeah, so those four picks I'm confident in. Titans, Commanders, I'm a little iffy on that, but whatever. And lastly, so this news came out. I'm not going to touch on this for a little while, but the news came out that Tom Brady and Giselle got divorce lawyers. What did we say? What did I say? I said this from the beginning. Giselle doesn't want Tom Brady playing football anymore. He's too old, she thinks he is. She doesn't care that he's still playing at a high level. She doesn't care that, you know, he's Tom fucking Brady and football is his life. She wants him home. Being a dad, you know, being a husband, And he just can't stand to do that. He's been playing football for 20 plus years, and the guy just cannot stop going back to being a quarterback. And I can see both sides to this. Honestly, I can see why Tom Brady would be pissed at Giselle. Giselle has a lot of reason to be pissed, but I can see why Tom Brady would be pissed. From Giselle's point of view, she's like, okay, you told us you were going to retire. I've been wanting you to retire since you were in New England. And then you go to Tampa, so we got to make a move. And, you won your Super Bowl, and is that not enough for you? So you come back the next year. We think this is your last year in the NFL. You lose, and you're done. You say you're done. And after 1 month, half a month, you already decide, no, I can't do this dad shit. I can't do this husband shit. I gotta keep playing football because it's my life. If I were Giselle, yeah, I'd be a little pissed because why do you keep neglecting your family? You're supposed to be this big family man and you just keep going back to football when you told us you were gonna retire. So that's Giselle's point of view. Tom Brady's point of view is, okay, I love this sport. I've been playing the sport way longer before I met you. And you come into my life and you marry me. You know what you got yourself into. Now I'm 45 years old. I'm still playing the game that I love. And I'm still playing it at a very high level. I'm still a top five quarterback. Why do you want me to stop? Dude, shouldn't you just want me to be happy? If I start playing bad, then yes, what's the point of me still playing? But I'm playing on a very good roster. I'm playing, still at a very high level. I'm still playing good football. There is literally zero reason for me to retire if you look at it from that standpoint. Now, if you look at it from the family standpoint, maybe yes, there is a reason to retire. But Tom Brady has been married to Giselle since 2009, has had kids with Giselle. He has three kids with her, and they've dealt with this. They know the drill with Tom Brady and how he's, quarterback. The greatest quarterback of all time. Can't they deal with it for another year or two? Because I don't think I think Tom Brady's retiring after this year. But you can't deal with it for a year or two, a lot more. And there's literally no reason for me to retire because I'm just playing that good of football. Why should I retire? And then Giselle says her piece. So they're getting divorce lawyers. This is happening, folks. Now, what I need to know is this divorce thing a threat? Is this a threat? Because if it's a threat, then if it's a threat, then that means maybe Giselle doesn't want to divorce him. She just really wants him to put this out into the media and say, Tom, if you're not done after this year, if you're not done help by tomorrow, we're done and you're losing me forever. That would be a threat. But if this is legit, if this is like Giselle's like, I'm done, like we can't do this anymore. Then when's Tom Brady going to retire? Maybe never. Giselle's been on his back talking about retirement since 2016 after they beat the Falcons in the Super Bowl. That's how long she's been on this retirement shit. And if he gets her off his back and he's still playing well, he's still playing good football, when is this man done? He's still got a great future with the Buccaneers. They still have a great roster. I legitimately don't know when this man will be done if he divorces Giselle. He might go until he's 50, because then if he divorces Giselle, all right, now I don't have my kids are probably fine with it. First off, I'm their dad. They can't tell me what to do. But if Giselle's off my back, I'm still playing good football. I'm still taking care of my body. I still love this shit. There's nothing I got to worry about. I can just keep playing until my body breaks down and I'm officially done. He doesn't get hit that much, he rarely gets injured. Man, I don't know what I'd want more. I mean, could the divorce mean that Tom Brady's like, okay, I gotta stop playing this game. I just lost the love of my life. It's time to focus on my family and stop playing football. Or what if his mindset is, okay, now I can divorce her. Now I can just keep doing what I love and not have to worry about my wife. Honestly, could go either way. Could go both ways. And that's a scary thought when you're a fan of an NFC team. What are you gonna do? He's Tom fucking Brady. The guy's psycho. All right. Well, that does it for today. Next week, hopefully we'll finally go 4 for 4 in a pick four parlay. But I'm going home this weekend to Nina. If any of my people that I'm seeing there are listening, Cal, Juke, Jace, Jux, Eli and JJ are coming home. Any of you guys, can't wait to see you guys. It's going to be a fun weekend in Neenah. We're back, and it's a homecoming, like Kanye said. All right. You guys have a great night.
Thirsty, thirsty, trying to choose. I mean, I know I'm critical. My nitty bag, my kitty boots. I got the juice, I got the juice.
Channel, Chatham's on. Foolie's glad I'm on. Even my haters kinda glad I'm on. Rest in peace to my...